So we're talking about spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with these radio frequency ID tags. Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre are the co-authors of this book, and it's word for word, chapter for chapter, one of the scariest reads you'll have if you are a privacy advocate. Maybe you aren't for everybody. Maybe you don't think about that too much for society, but just, you know, your own privacy you thought you had control over. Wait till you hear what these corporations want from you and how they plan on getting it by not telling you that they are, and how they're really banking that Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre won't be able to pull off a counter RFID revolution. I mean, they got a lot of money riding on this. And they feel like it's their right to know everything about what you do with the product once you get it out of the store. And what would the government do with that information? What will criminals do with it once it's out there? Who's going to be in charge of keeping this information? I mean, the government can't even track the sexual predators, the sexual offenders that were registered in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Right. I mean, those guys are now blown like leaves all over the country and nobody knows where they are. Well, does that mean we'll start using RFID tags on humans? I mean, to combat how, you know, poorly the government can manage so many other things, do you go for a lowest common denominator and everybody has to start getting RFID tags? What about an opt-in system? So people can choose to do that. What about one where they don't let you know the number of American soldiers who have RFID tags? Where could this all go? And does it inevitably bring us to that dark fear of so many Christians, the mark of the beast? We'll get to this all coming up with Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. How much control do we have over our privacy? And just how bad and how deep could those abuses go? We'll talk about that in regard to these RFIDs, these radio frequency ID tags that are increasingly in everything we buy, in everything we consume, even when they don't have a tag on it. And Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre are the co-authors of the book Spy Chips. We should reiterate that there are lots of these tags that are clandestinely hidden on clothing, not in the actual, say, wash and wear instructions or anything like that, but just woven into the fabric of the clothes.
Yeah, Ian, in fact, last year we uncovered at a conference, an industry conference we attended, we found Calvin Klein clothing labels, Carter's baby clothing labels, Champion sportswear labels, all prototyped with RFID tags embedded directly into the label. And this is something that the average consumer would not be able to spot. We actually have photographs of that in our book, Spy Chips. And in fact, you know, earlier you were talking about sort of how these companies don't want us to get this information out. I mean, that's absolutely true. And that's why one of the reasons why we're excited about this book is, even though it's about a technical topic, it's been compared to a technological thriller.
It is.
Yeah, it. From the feedback we're getting on it is absolutely extraordinary. That it's very readable. It's a page turner. You know, before you turn around, you're halfway through the book, and you're deeply into understanding this technology. And the reason I think for Coast to Coast listeners we're particularly excited about the book is because it's the kind of book you can buy and give to your aunt, you know, Ida.
Right.
And she can sit down with it and read it and finally get on board with the rest of us who are saying, hang on, things aren't as they seem. There's a second agenda operating. You can give this to your lawmakers. You can give it to, you know, the guy in the next cubicle over. It's a very accessible book. You know, like I said, the feedback we've been getting on it is very good. You don't have to be technical, and you don't have to be particularly conspiracy-oriented to get right into it and really see the evidence.
Well,
and we've got hundreds of footnotes in there, so any, you know, even the most skeptical reader, I think by the end is convinced that this stuff is very real.
Well, this is a conspiracy theory. It's the theory of the conspirators, however, that's really at work here. It's not you're trying to put it together based on little evidence over here, and we rub that against a little evidence over there to get a spark. You actually have the memos. You have the people. You have the things they've said in the places where they've said them that lay out the blueprint for this conspiracy. And
well,
it is one.
Yeah, the part you're getting to now, this is really the crux of the book, and this is all new information that we've never shared before. In fact, this is the sort of the premier announcement of some of this information is on this very radio program. The book is not officially released until Tuesday. We have reports in that it is in local bookstores. Of course, you can order it from Amazon.com. But this is essentially the debut of some information that now we're going to get into, which is really the juicy stuff.
Well,
talk about conspiracy theories. These companies have come up with that, you know, the outrageous plans in their own words. We have them dead to rights, outlining exactly what they intend to do through their patent documents.
Well, I want to go that way here, and we'll do it right now. But let me also ask you a quick question about the local bookstores.
Yeah.
If I went to my local bookstore and I bought a copy of Spy Chips, would it have an RFID tag in it when I go up to pay for it at the counter?
Fortunately, not yet, but that's on the drawing board. We actually have documentation from the Japanese Booksellers Association that they want to put RFID tags in reading material so that all of their surveillance equipment can watch people in bookstores and figure out how they browse, which books they pick up, which magazines they flip through, long before they get to the check stand to actually make a purchase. They would be linking your interests with your identity, literally as you're standing there browsing through the store. But it hasn't happened yet, fortunately.
I bought a book last week that had an RFID tag in it.
My guess is that what you may have found, and if you did, we want to see it.
Yeah.
Let me say that first of all. But a lot of times the anti-theft tags, and this is a huge danger, the anti-theft tags, which look a lot like RFID tags, they're flat, they have the little maze antenna running around.
Right.
They're called EAS, or electronic article surveillance tags. We've got a picture of them in the second chapter in the book to kind of alert people that they look similar. The problem is that you have no way of knowing whether the particular tag you've seen is an anti-theft tag, which simply communicates, hey, there's an item here that wasn't paid for, or whether it's an RFID tag that says, there's a book here, and it's called Spy Chips, and it was bought by Ian Punnett at a Walden Books at this date with this credit card. So that's really the problem, is that those reader devices in the doorway, when you walk in and out of the bookstore, they're being upgraded, we would say downgraded, I guess, but they're being upgraded in some cases to incorporate RFID readers. So you could be getting scanned simply by walking through one of those anti-theft portals on the way out, or even on the way in, and they could be, you know, electronically frisking you to figure out if you're carrying something that might help them identify you or make inferences about your purchase preferences.
Well, just so you know, I threw it out before I even got up to the counter. I just pulled it out of the book. I didn't even want it in there. And I went up to the counter, and I paid for it, and I walked out. And I hadn't thought about holding on to it until suddenly I read your book and I wanted to go back and find out what kind of tag that was, because it looked different than the other foil tags that I've seen on items or in stores as, you know, theft defeating items. So I want to go back and get it, but I could swear that I saw one. But maybe I'm just getting paranoid after reading the book. But it's not misplaced paranoia. This is the kind of healthy sort of, you know, fear that keeps you from getting burned. And that brings us to the new items of interest in the book. All right, let's debut some of the stuff that you have uncovered that is for the first time available in Spy Chips.
Well, sure, Ian. One thing, and you were talking about the worst case scenario that we could possibly come up with. I mean, we've heard some really scandalous information when we've gone to meetings and we've combed lots of white papers. But really, the patent applications and patents themselves are some of the most scary material you could ever read. And what's interesting is, as you brought up, the retailers and manufacturers who want to have this technology do not want consumers to know about it, or even know when it's there. And they certainly don't want them to know their intentions to use it to track people through stores and even outside of retail spaces. And the other thing is they've denied that it's even possible to do that. They keep saying, oh, the read range is so low on these tags, there's no way to possibly do it. Well, we've pretty much found information that proves that there's this other agenda and that it's very possible at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Well, again, even if a whole city goes Wi-Fi, at what point does that become a way to link up automatically to any of these? I mean, they're using a Wi-Fi radio signal, in effect, out to, create a wireless web in a city. Why wouldn't that, how come that couldn't be turned around to be used for RFID tags?
Oh, it absolutely could. I mean, and that's going to enable what they call this Internet of Things. These manufacturers and retailers, we're talking big companies like Procter & Gamble, Gillette, Walmart, their plan is to have everyday objects with RFID tags on them that will enable them to talk to each other and even talk to retailers and manufacturers at any point where they are in the world, so they can be identified and tracked at any point.
All right. So let's talk about some of those government abuses and what would happen. What are some of the ways in which you all have imagined this could backfire in the worst possible way for those of us who are concerned about our privacy?
Well, again, I think the patent documents speak to that so well, and we've uncovered one particularly frightening patent document from IBM. Of course, IBM, everyone knows IBM.
Right. I have an IBM laptop.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think IBM stands for I've been moved. but actually, Ian, it stands for I've been monitored, as we'll see. They have filed a patent application, and it's called Identification and Tracking of Persons Using RFID Tagged Items. Okay, not too subtle, huh?
Right. I mean, pretty much, they didn't even give it a clever title that lets you wonder what it was really about. Nothing cryptic about that.
There you go. I mean, it's pretty obvious. And it gets more frightening as you read through it, because IBM details a way that they're planning to collect RFID tag numbers once these RFID tags are on every product in the world. Your shoes, your clothing, your backpacks, your credit cards. They want to collect these at the cash register and store these numbers in a database. And they love nothing more than to associate those with the individual customers who purchased those, so that later, when they see these tags, they can pull up their database and say, ah, that was purchased by, I don't know, Catherine Albrecht.
Right.
And so they could possibly identify the exact person who's, say, walking through their doors. Or they could learn something about the person's gender. I mean, they've got this tag on them. They can tell, say, for example, it's on pantyhose. It's probably a woman, although not always, probably a woman.
Well, what can they use? Other ways that they can use this kind of stuff? We talked about the insertion of into human flesh, even beyond that. What other ways do you see that this could actually become part of the human person, where you might, as a woman or as a man, you might put one of these products in your body or on your body that you bought over the counter that ends up staying in your body or somewhere in your body over time?
Well, and that's what they're hoping for. And IBM's actually developed a device that would allow them to track these items in the retail environments and plenty of other places. They've called their device the Person Tracking Unit. And what this does is it zeroes in on RFID tag products and uses those items to watch people like a hawk.
Okay, so like, give us an example, like for women.
Okay, well, let's say, for example, I purchase a pair of shoes, okay? And unbeknownst to me, there's an RFID tag embedded in the insole. And by the way, Ian, we have actually seen prototypes of these things. So they're very excited about the idea. Now think about this. How often do you trade your shoes with someone else? Probably never, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, not very, I mean, unless philosophically means walking in somebody else's shoes. No, not usually. Other than the metaphor, I don't know.
Right, and probably just about every time you go into Walmart, you wear one or two types of shoes. I mean, I typically wear my sneakers when I'm going into a store, although I don't shop at Walmart anymore. But you know, if you're wearing the same shoes, so they get that tag number when you purchase those shoes at the checkout, and then every time they see those shoes in the environment, they can know, well, there's, say, Catherine Albrecht. And let's say that those are women's shoes, okay? Well, then they can figure that's a female, right?
Right.
And depending on the cost of those shoes, because that tag, you know, links to a database with all kinds of information about those shoes. And based on the price, they can determine, well, is this someone who has a lot of money or, you know, someone we really don't want to be bothered with, right? So they can tell a great deal about these tags.
But I'm more worried about this illustration in the book about areas within the female body that could accommodate what you call a deep organ implant. That's the patent application that I'm concerned about.
That's really, really scary. That's the next generation of the Verichip as we see it, which right now, as you know, the Verichip is a little glass encapsulated RFID tag that's injected into your flesh and your upper arm. But they're thinking, well, that's not deep enough. And wow, you know, people can dig those out. Perhaps you're kidnapped and someone can just rip that tag right out of your arm, cut it out with a knife. They want to plant those things much deeper where they'll never come out.
Now, why do you say they want to do that? How do we know they want to do it?
All right. We've got their patent.
They applied for a patent, and they have to describe it in the patent.
Well, this is the part that's absolutely extraordinary, and I think it's why the industry is so afraid this book is coming out right now, is that, you know, Liz being the extraordinary investigator she is, and Liz, by the way, is a former bank examiner, so you want to talk about someone with incredible sleuthing skills. You know, she went into that patent office and must have spent literally thousands of hours in there, and she found patents for things that would just boggle your mind. I mean, one of these patents is the one you're talking about, Ian. This idea that you would take an RFID tag, encapsulate it in glass, and inject it into human beings so they essentially become inventory themselves. So now when you walk by the reader, instead of the reader knowing what's in your purse, your backpack, or the size of your underwear or your shoes, now they know who you are. And they can keep a record of every place you've been seen, every time you pass through a courthouse door, every time you walk through the portals of a Walmart. All of that could be logged and recorded in a database. And they would have literally a moment-by-moment view of every place you go and everything you do. Now, one of the patents that Liz found that is the extraordinary one you're talking about says, well, wait a minute. This Verichip implant, they put it currently between the elbow and the shoulder and the upper arm. It's a quick little injection process, so they say. It's relatively painless, although we have a picture of the injection device in our book, Spy Chips, which, you know, I don't think it looks painless, but okay. But their concern is that people could just remove that. So someone has patented a way to implant this inside the head, inside the lumen of the internal organs, inside a woman's uterus, literally in a part of the body that if you were to try to remove it, and one of the examples they give is a runaway. You know, their goal is safe escape and escape from you know, parents and survival. They talk about the fact that, well, you know, if you were to try to gouge this out of yourself, you'd probably die. Therefore, you'll probably leave it inside yourself. And the really scary part is that this thing doesn't just send out an identification signal when it's queried, like a Verichip, but they've actually patented a way that this thing would electroshock you, it could vibrate, it could even transmit your conversations remotely. And all of this is patented. Now, the important thing to realize about patents is that any inventor who files a patent has to sign a sworn statement saying that the thing that they've patented actually works, that it literally can do what they claim it can do. So someone out there has come up with a device that can be planted deep inside of an organ that can vibrate, electroshock, or transmit your conversations remotely. And now we start to get into the really scary applications of this.
Well, let's do that next then. That's U.S. patent application number 200417425, by the way. And you get a diagram as well as an explanation of the internal organ chip that you can never remove. And it's at least in its application form and its prototype form, it's already here. It's not being used yet. But how could these get used? And just how bad could it get? That's what Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre will lay out for us next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. If you ever doubt the investigative skills of our guests, Catherine Albrecht or Liz McIntyre, then go to page 153 of the book Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. Now, they certainly have the resume to support what they're doing, but it's the talent and the chutzpah that really makes it hit pay dirt here in the chapter entitled Adapt or Die, How RFID Backers Hope You Get On Board. On a lark, Liz typed the word confidential into the website search engine, figuring it would flash back no documents found. Instead, she gasped in amazement as the Auto ID Center's website, the electronic heart of the consortium that's been developing RFID, the group called Auto ID Center, delivered over 60 confidential documents, and were they ever scorchers? Clearly not meant for our eyes. On the Auto ID Center's own website, the insider presentations and reports detailed plans to pacify consumers and co-op public officials. There was even a private list of direct telephone numbers for some of the world's most powerful business executives, direct lines to the people who had funneled millions of dollars into the development of the spy chip. It was unbelievable. The very same people who had promised us that RFID data would be safe because, quote, internet security is very good, had given us a compelling demonstration of exactly the opposite and given us a close-up look at their dirty laundry in the process. As we read through the documents, it became clear that the Auto ID Center had problems that went well beyond their failure to secure their website. According to the studies they had inadvertently made available to us, a whopping 78% of consumers surveyed reacted negatively to RFID on privacy grounds, and quote, more than half claimed to be extremely or very concerned about the technology. Getting people to accept RFID was not going to be easy. So, of course, their best method was not to tell us. It's to not bring us into the decision-making process of how much RFID we want in our life. And just how bad can it get? Well, we just started talking about the patents that have been applied for to be used with this RFID technology in the very near future. Body implants. And if you think they don't have data on that, then you haven't learned anything yet, because they back up everything in this book, Spy Chips, next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. We're talking about spy chips. That's what Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre have nicknamed RFID technology, which is coming everywhere in consumer applications. But what about government applications? We're hearing about these deep organ implants that could be done completely without your knowledge, or even with your knowledge. This is even very scary. I mean, there's lots of ways that people's arms can be twisted into having to have these things, but then they become the spy chip that can never be removed. And that's what we're talking about. Let's go as deep as we can into this area that you all have been working on. How much could the government get these into our bodies, and or how much would we allow them to put into our bodies? What do we know from the patent applications?
Well, the patent applications tell us, first of all, Ian, that there is an interest in doing this. There's an interest in doing this to keep captive populations captive. They actually talk about, there's another patent that we reveal in the people tracking chapter of our book, Spy Chips, that talks about Kevlar armbands. This is bulletproof fabric armbands that would would be strapped onto your wrist or onto your upper arm, actually, and would contain a tiny injection, a hypodermic module loaded with anesthetics that would literally knock you out. And the idea here is if you wanted to keep a population captive, you could put one of these armbands on everyone. You could then stimulate the armband if people got near the gates or the exits or certain off-limits areas to essentially deliver their payload and knock people senseless and unconscious, and they would fall helpless to the ground. Not only could they do this with keeping people captive by putting these in doorways or gates, but they could even activate them remotely. I mean, you can envision a point at which some evil dictator, they even talk about employees on corporate campuses being outfitted with these things. And you could envision someone, picking up a phone, literally dialing a number and transmitting the knockout information via a phone line and punishing someone remotely, causing them to fall to the ground. It's absolutely extraordinary.
Now, what would be the justification you think that they would be able to get somebody to have that, to say, look, if you want to work here, you have to have this in, and ultimately it's for your own protection? I mean, how do you sell that to somebody that we've implanted something in you that potentially we can choose to knock you out with later on?
Well, the question is, how voluntary would it be? Because in this patent, they actually describe it as being something that would be put on captive populations. So those could be prisoners. The shocking part for us is when they talked about putting this on mentally ill people, putting them on the homeless. They talk about putting them on, people in enterprise corporate campuses. But they also talk about putting them on airplane passengers. So that literally, I guess the idea is when you get on the airplane, you'll be outfitted with one of these bulletproof armbands with a hypodermic needle in it, so that if you at any point try to get near the cabin, it would knock you out right there at the airplane. And, you really got to ask yourself, we're already being subjected to so much incredible amount of personal invasion to get on an airplane these days. You know, when I see people queuing up and standing in line and having all their belongings pawed through and everybody sort of obediently standing in line and showing all their ID and going through all the things that we go through today, what would it take for people to say, oh, okay, you want to put a knockout armband on me? I guess that's the price we pay for safety. And just standing in line and, bleeding like sheep as they put these things on us.
But I think that's the interesting angle, too, I want to go back to is what they would have to have a positive reason for why you would do that. And we know captive populations wouldn't have a right to opt in. But I just wonder whether they would say, look, security being what it is, we have to fight terrorism. And so this is the new way of doing it, is if everybody agrees to have this implanted, then you can get on the plane. If you can't, I'm sorry, you can't fly our airlines. But that way, you, the consumer, know that this is a completely safe flight, that there's no way anybody could ever hijack it, because we have the way to disable that person immediately before they could ever get to the cockpit. That way, some people would say, well, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to worry about. I'll go ahead and have the implant if that means keeping the bad guys out of the cockpit.
Well, and at that point, if it means keeping them out of the cockpit, why not just keep them off the streets and keep them out of your home and keep them? I mean, I could see that. That's definitely a slippery slope to the point at which, everyone would be outfitted with these. But, that's not the only method that they're talking about. One of the things that I think is very scary, up until now, we've really talked about marketing and business applications for this, and they're pretty scary, and we devote several chapters in the book just to helping people understand what the incentive is to put this everywhere. But the really scary part comes in when you start looking at what the government wants to do with this. Let me give you an example. The former Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Bush administration, the Bush cabinet, Tommy Thompson, former governor of Wisconsin, is within months of retiring from his government post, he took a position as a member of the board of directors of the Verichip human implant company. Now, this is not just some random government official. This was the highest ranking medical official in this country. He is now sitting on that board of directors, and he recently did an interview with CBS MarketWatch where he said with a straight face, this is exciting new technology. We are, it's exciting to think about putting them into members of the military. literally injecting them. And, of course, I guess you'd face a court-martial if you said no in that case. And he also said, and this is the part that really chilled me, he said, we are working towards an electronic medical record for all Americans. And the way you would access your electronic medical record, which is basically all your medical record would be federalized and under federal control, is you would access it through a chip in your arm. So the idea is that this unique number would be implanted into your arm and encoded in this chip. And in order to receive medical services, you would have this little chip scanned. They would call up your little number. They would make the little log entry in your federal medical electronic medical record. The government would at that point be able to track all of your medical activities. They'd be able to, as we talked about earlier in the program, you know, link that up with your prescription information. In fact, that little chip in your arm could be just the thing to signal your medicine cabinet to start tracking you when you go in there and you pick up the bottle of whatever it is you're taking off the shelf. Now, they're seriously talking about this.
And they're seriously talking about it because they're excited. This might mean, as they're trying to sell this, that you would always be assured of taking the right dose of the right medicine. It would alert what? The doctors that you're not doing something right. I mean, they have to put some sort of sugar coat on this pill to get you to swallow it.
Well, and now you're getting into this voluntary piece. You know, they say, well, you got to do this to take the job. You've got to, you know, you have to, you know, whatever the restrictions are. I could see them going about it in much the same way as the supermarket loyalty card, which is where everybody's insurance could get a discount if you, quote unquote, voluntarily participate in the medication monitoring program. Let's imagine that suddenly insurance costs doubled unless you are willing to put one of these devices in your medicine cabinet and allow your HMO, public health officials, nurses, doctors, anyone who wanted to with it within that tight medical community to observe your use of medication. That's the justification that I see coming, is they'll say, hey, it's a discount. And then, of course, just like with the supermarket cards, it turns out not to be a discount. It turns out to be a surcharge for the people who don't participate. Because if you compare the before and after prices, the discount's about what you were getting before, but the people who don't capitulate, who don't go along with it, wind up paying through the nose.
Adapt or die. That reminds me of an episode of Law & Order. I know this is probably a couple of years old, so you all are well aware of it. But there was a particular episode where they were trying to track the movements of a murderer, and they were able to do that by using his automatic toll paying card, his toll pass card. And they could tell when he went through certain toll booths, and then that proved that he'd been at the scene of the crime, et cetera. And originally, and they actually sort of talked about it a little bit in the show, that that wasn't what that technology was meant for. It was just to make it easier to pay your tolls and not to have to slow down to do it. But since they already had the information and it was already there, it was just one, you know, bench warrant away from being handed over to the police for them to, you know, convict this person. Glad they convicted them, but it just goes to show you that if it's out there, some people will find a way to use it.
Well, Ian, you're right about that. This is Liz here. In fact, there have been several court cases already in real life, not just on TV shows, in which toll tag information has been used. In one case in Illinois, a child custody case, one lawyer tried to establish that his client's wife wasn't spending enough time with the kids, so the divorce attorney subpoenaed her iPass toll records to show a pattern of working late. He said, well, you can't be at the toll booth and on the road late at night and be with the kids. So it's just a matter of time before this information is going to be used against people, and they don't even realize it.
It monitored wherever you go with spy chips. Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre's book goes for sale later on next week. But if you go on now, I'm sure you can advance order it from any of the internet locations that sell books. Just link up to them through Coast to Coast.
Actually, and I'm on Amazon right now, and it says if you order it now, you can have it one-day shipping. So Amazon's got it in, and in fact, they've got it in at a 34% discount.
Well, I would grab that right now then. Big Brother Gets Up Close and Personal is what it says on the back. And one of those things that people have often worried about, and in some ways, for some people, it's thought of as sort of a religious mythology, but from the book of Revelation, the idea of the mark of the beast, that you would not be able to do any commerce at all unless you had been tagged. And in this case, it was a prediction of a coming apocalypse. Where are you all with that? And is that, does that come up in your research at all?
This is Catherine speaking. That's a topic that's been of interest to me for many years now. And as I've shared with George's listeners in the past, you know, when I was 8 years old, my grandmother took me aside and warned me of a time when people would not be able to buy or sell unless they had the mark of the beast on their right hand or their forehead. And of course, that's referring to a passage in Revelation, chapter 13, verses 16 through 18. And with your permission, I'd like to read those. It says, "And he causes," and he being the beast, "causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and captive, to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell except he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666. That passage refers to a time when essentially no one will be able to participate in commerce or in modern society without some form of numbered identification. And the thing that's truly extraordinary about this passage is that 2,000 years ago on the Isle of Patmos off of Greece, when John received this revelation, received the dream where this was revealed to him, it was really inconceivable that it would be possible not only to have a number to buy and sell, but even to identify every person on the planet. I mean, that's just, they didn't even know the limits of the physical world. Now we've mapped out the entire globe. According to National Geographic in a recent issue, they say we've now identified the last people on the planet, so there are no more uncontacted or unidentified people even in the wilds of the Amazonian jungle. So we now have the ability to identify everyone. What the other thing that we have, and this has all come together in the last 15, 20, 30 years, we also have an internet and satellite communications that would enable any point on the globe, any place a sale takes place, whether it's deep in the jungle, out in the desert, or at the top of, you know, Mount Fuji, it's now possible using satellite communications and the wireless internet network to require every transaction to take place with a number. So the pieces to make this possible are coming together, and what makes it especially scary is that this VeriChip implant device, they've got a variation on it called the VeriPay. And it's essentially the same device that's injected in your body, contains a unique ID number. But that ID number is linked up in a database with your credit card information or your bank account information. So rather than using cash or even swiping a credit card, you would literally pass a body part in front of or under an RFID reader, which would capture that number, and voila, you'd make your transaction. So the idea that you would need a number to buy and sell that was somehow incorporated in a mark on your right hand or your forehead is actually now doable. Now, will the mark of the beast be RFID? I have no idea. We don't know that. But we do know that for the first time in history, this great mystery that some of the most brilliant minds of all time have pondered and contemplated and tried to understand is now technologically possible. And I'd say that's only within the last couple of years, perhaps even only within the last year, that all of the pieces have come together to make that possible.
It's a very interesting question, because it takes spy chips then in an entirely different direction. It says that it isn't just something which we have done, but somehow we were destined to do, which kind of freaks me out a little bit.
You don't have to be a Christian or believe in prophecy, I think, to find this stuff terrifying. But for those of us who are Christians, I think there's an added level of just astonishment and I think an added perception of just how dangerous this could become, because of course at that point in time, you know, what the Bible talks about, the passage right before that says, and he had power to give life to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast could speak and cause anyone who would not worship the image to be killed. So, you know, this is talking about a point in time where there will be, you know, one leader over everything, you know, one world religion. And if you don't bow down low enough, or if you don't, you know, hand over your sovereignty to this one world leader or this religious leader, you'll be killed. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And I, you know, Christians have been fearing this time for thousands of years and fruitlessly trying to understand it before the time was ripe. But I think we're actually coming to the time where people could understand. Yes, you know, we're seeing the globalization of the currency in Europe. We're seeing increasing globalization of commerce. We're seeing just yesterday I was reading about.
I'm afraid we're running out of time for this hour, but we can come back to that thought. I just don't want to be late for the break, and because we're going to open up the phone lines too for just a second. So let's just sum that up by saying, hard to imagine that the Beast is Tommy Thompson, but or that somehow I would have imagined that the Beast would have looked better in a suit anyway. But whatever the case is, it's something to ponder about spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. More with Catherine and Liz and you next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett.